I'm Dan Rodericks, and this is Midday. There are more young people on the planet today than at any point in history. But the health needs of these 1.8 billion adolescents often go unmet in developing countries, where access to medical treatment is limited. In this hour, we'll take a look at the work of JAPIGO, a Baltimore-based health organization that works around the globe to reduce the spread of HIV and increase access to family planning and reproductive health. We'll hear from Dr. Michelle Farmer, a pediatrician and adolescent health expert, along with two young women, one from Nigeria and one from Kenya, who are working to fight misconceptions about disease and educate their peers. That's Midday, after the news from NPR. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome back to Midday. Dan Rodericks here. Thanks again for joining us. Last night, of course, was the Oscars, the Academy Awards, a big night for the creative class in America. Our guest in the second hour of the show today is Scott Tinberg, who asks the question, what about the rest of us? What about the rest of America's creative class, the workaday, middle class, working class artists, writers, photographers, graphic designers, independent filmmakers, musicians, booksellers who have been downsized and displaced since the Great Recession and since the advent of the internet. Scott Tinberg has written a provocative book called Culture Crash. He'll be joining us in the second hour of our show today. You know, there are nearly 2 billion young people, that is, ages 10 to 24, on the planet today, more than at any time in history. 2 billion between 10 and 24. These young people, the majority of whom live in developing countries, face a lot of issues, particularly health challenges, particularly high rates of teen pregnancy and the risk of sexually transmitted infections, HIV foremost among them. According to a 2012 report from UNICEF, an estimated 2.2 million adolescents, around 60% of them girls, are living with HIV, and many do not know that they are infected. About one in seven of all new HIV infections occur during adolescence. Just last week, the World Health Organization said that AIDS is now the leading cause of death for adolescents in Africa, the second leading cause of death among adolescents globally. Working to provide education and access to health care in these countries is very difficult. Health workers must fight myths and fears that often discourage or prevent boys and girls, young men and women, from seeking care. So we're talking about adolescent health today because of a symposium that's being held in Baltimore this week, a symposium organized by JAPIGO, J-H-P-I-E-G-O. It's a global health organization affiliated with Johns Hopkins. It's been around for 40 years. It focuses on health issues for women, families, and now adolescents. And this is always a great opportunity for us to talk to people from JAPIGO about the work they're doing around the world. Based here in Baltimore, a lot of folks might never have heard of JAPIGO. So we have an opportunity each time, maybe once a year on Midday, to bring you some topics and talk about JAPIGO's work. A little later in the hour, we're going to hear from two young women who are attending this conference I told you about. One, a young woman from Kenya who is working to educate her peers on safe sex. The other is a sociology student from Nigeria who created a magazine for university students on health issues. So we'll get a chance to talk to them this hour. But we start off by welcoming Dr. Michelle Farmer to Studio A, a pediatrician here in Baltimore and senior advisor with JAPIGO now and an expert in adolescent health. Michelle Farmer, Dr. Farmer, nice to have you on the show with us.
Thanks so much for inviting us, Dan. It's really a pleasure to have a chance to talk with you and to inform some of your listeners about JAPIGO.
Yeah, we've got to do this each time, so if you don't mind. JAPIGO actually is the official name of the nonprofit, J-H-P-I-E-G-O. It started off years ago as the Johns Hopkins Program for International Education in Gynecology and Obstetrics. And I say years ago, I mean like 40 years ago now. So you've been with them for a year and a half. Prior to that, you've been based here as a pediatrician, right?
Yes, that's right. And Actually, what a lot of people don't know at JPYGO is I was a consultant with them from 1988 until 1996.
What did you do for JPYGO in those years?
Well, there were a number of programs that expressed some concern about reproductive tract infections in women, that this was a growing problem, and that they wanted to find ways to develop a streamlined approach that was cost-effective and could be used in low-resource settings. And interestingly enough, here in Baltimore, we had developed that kind of a system for use in clinics, in inner-city clinics. Mm-hmm. And basically what we did was JPYGO invited me and some of my colleagues who were working in some of these inner-city clinics to develop a model that could be used in low- and middle-income countries that was very similar to a model that was being used here in Baltimore that was very effective.
This is what JPYGO does, right?
Yes.
You help people who live in these countries set up better systems for delivering health care.
Yes,
specifically,
that's correct.
Specifically aimed at women, we know that. And now your focus has shifted toward adolescents. What I found interesting from my prep for the show today is that women and children get I don't know if it's a lot of attention. They get good attention in terms of health when the children are young, when they're babies, when they're born, up to the age of five.
Yes.
And then in a lot of these countries that we're talking about here in the developing world, there's a drop-off in healthcare, and that's when these problems develop.
Right. Yes, that's true. I mean, globally, maternal mortality rate, for example, has reduced by about 40-45% worldwide. And that's a great tribute to programs, training programs like the ones that JPYGO has developed. We're not the only ones out there, but we certainly can take a share in the success of successfully reducing maternal mortality rate. Similarly, some of our programs have targeted those factors that contribute to the deaths of children from newborn under the age of five. What's happened, though, is that children who now are surviving past their sixth birthday, entering into adolescence, are often overlooked. And we have found that a significant number of these young people are getting pregnant at 15, 16, 14 years of age. And we now feel it's very important for us to focus on this young population, to try to understand what are the major health threats, and also to make some adaptations for the programs that we have for women at risk for maternal mortality and morbidity, and make these programs adaptable to an age-appropriate, a younger age population, the adolescents who are affected.
Now, the number 17 is important for our discussion. A lot of the statistics I've been handed with regard to this problem refers to 17 developing countries. Is that right?
Yes.
Is that where JPYGO has some presence?
Well, JPYGO has presence in about 45 countries right now. These are low and middle income countries throughout the world, in Asia, Sub-Saharan Africa, and some in the Caribbean area as well. But in 17 of these countries, the population under the age of 18 is over 50%. Uganda, for example, is one of the youngest countries, with over 50% of their population being under the age of 18. And in Malawi, one in three of the population are adolescents.
Okay, so our discussion today would generally look at those 17 countries.
Yes.
All right. Here's something: one in three girls in these countries is married before the age of 18. Half the population, as you say, in 17 developing countries, including 15 of them in sub-Saharan Africa, half the population under 18. 19% of adolescent girls in the developing world give birth before their 18th birthday, and 90% are married. And then another note here, 20,000 girls under the age of 18 giving birth in developing countries every day. So one of the subjects that you deal with is marriage of young people, of young women, and also, of course, the pregnancy rate.
Yes.
But then we'll also talk about HIV today.
Yes. particularly with regards to the issue of child marriage, this is a continues to be a troubling problem in a number of countries, not just in sub-Saharan Africa, but also in some of our Asian countries as well. And you know, what we're learning through our work in JAPAIGO is this is not just a policy issue. For example, in some of our countries, there is a national policy that prohibits marriage under the age of 18, but the policies are not enforced. Or it may be a national policy, but at the state level or at a district level, these policies have not been approved. So they get generally ignored. And what that means then is the practice of child marriage continues. And you have to remember that these issues are big problems in countries where you have largely communities that are living in poverty. For a young person, an adolescent who gets married, this is seen as a bit of an economic advantage for her family. But these advantages are short-lived. When a young person is encouraged or forced to be married at 15 years of age, that means that she's out of school. That means she's not educated. And that means that the potential of this young person may be severely limited over time. And of course, one of the other problems that we worry about when a teenager gets married is that then she's now encouraged to become a mother. And this is often at a time when she's physically not able to carry a pregnancy to term. It may mean that she may be at higher risk for anemia. She may be at higher risk for obstructed labor and other complications, including obstetric fistula. These are all common problems that occur, complications that can occur when a very young woman or young girl gets pregnant. And we also worry about the fact that many of these young girls are getting married when they are really not voluntarily entering into these relationships. So there are a number of factors that programs that JAPAIGO is organizing are taking a look at. This is, you know, our mission is to reduce needless deaths and needless morbidity among women and their families. And we feel it's important to equip communities, to equip countries with interventions that deal with the many aspects of the problems that young women are facing.
On the question of adolescent pregnancy, the one you were just talking about, I know there's like 17 countries that we may be discussing today, or more than those, each of them different. But how do you go about starting this conversation in these countries? I know JAPAIGO has been around for a while, has been working on this, but generally from your experience and what you've learned since you've been with JAPAIGO, how do you break through the cultural walls to have this conversation?
That's a great question, Dan. And
well, it seems to me like one of the biggest challenges you face.
It's a huge challenge. But one of the most important approaches that JAPAIGO uses is that we make a concerted effort to hire within the countries where we are working. So this is not about a health expert from Baltimore or New York who's going to Nairobi or who's going to Lilongwe in Malawi to tell the people in that country what they must do. This is about empowering and building capacity within these countries. And many of our country programs are staffed by the people who reside in that country. And this is the best way, we feel, to develop programs that will be culturally sensitive and culturally appropriate.
And how do they start that conversation? Say someone from Kenya who needs to have a conversation. Is it done with peers? Is it done with young women? How is it done?
Well, you know, I think there are a variety of approaches. One that I think that you'll hear a little bit more about with these young people is how we are accessing input from the young people themselves. That we think that it's not enough just to have adults putting together programs that they think work best, but really getting input from the young people themselves, that there's a powerful potential of youth, that youth leadership and youth participation will be essential as we move forward.
So we're going to meet Amara Oji from Nigeria and Felicity Karimi from Kenya. They're going to be visiting with us in Studio A because they're here in town for this symposium that you're putting together. The nature of the symposium is obviously this subject of adolescent health in developing countries, but is it to train people or just to have a good conversation, a conference about how you go about this?
Well, this meeting, it's a two-day meeting with health experts from all over the world, essentially, coming together to look at transformative solutions for adolescent health. What we want to do is to use these 2 days as a consultation to find out where the gaps are, have an honest discussion about what is working, what's not working, and find ways to move forward to deepen JAPAIGO's investment in adolescent and young adult health. And I do want to say that one of the other important elements of this two-day meeting is we're bringing in 4 young people from some of the countries where we work, from Philippines, Malawi, and from Kenya and Nigeria. And they are going to be active participants as we lay a foundation for some new transformative solutions to address some of these long-term problems.
Dr. Michelle Farmer with me in Studio A for this hour of midday, senior advisor with JAPAIGO, the global health organization affiliated with Johns Hopkins University based in Fells Point, right?
Yes.
Yeah. We're going to take a break here. When we get back, we'll meet two of those young women who are here for the symposium that Dr. Farmer was just talking about. Felicity Karimi and Amara Oji are joining us in the studio here in just a minute. Please stay tuned. And welcome back to Midday, everyone. Dan Rodericks here. Another opportunity to tell you about the work that JAPAIGO does around the world. JAPAIGO, as I said, is based here in Baltimore, actually has an office in Fells Point. It's affiliated with Johns Hopkins University. It's been around for 40 years or plus. Its mission is to prevent the needless deaths of women and their children and families around the world. And today, Dr. Michelle Farmer is with us, who's a senior advisor with JAPAIGO, specialty in adolescent health. And I just wanted to mention this news report from the other day, Dr. Farmer. You heard me make reference to this earlier. The World Health Organization, the President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief. People refer to that as PEPFAR, the President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, and UNAIDS and the UN Children's Fund. They all got together and put out a report just last week saying that AIDS is now the leading cause of death for adolescents in Africa and the second leading cause of death among adolescents globally. Road accidents and injury are the number one killer of adolescents globally. About 120,000 people between 10 and 19 years died of AIDS-related illnesses in 2013, according to this report that was put out. Adolescent girls, particularly in sub-Saharan Africa, are most affected. In South Africa, in 2013, more than 860 girls became infected with HIV every week, compared to 170 boys, leading me to wonder, are girls more vulnerable to AIDS than boys? What will we say about that difference in number there? What might you say?
Well, there are a number of factors for the higher rates of HIV infection in adolescent girls compared to the adolescent boys. Some of it relates to the issues around sexual debut at a very young age, around sexual coercion and pressure, that young adolescents who are living in poverty will often find themselves in high-risk relationships. And these are some of the, you know, common problems of poverty. And you can find this particularly in sub-Saharan Africa, but in some of our Asian countries, this is also the case. And it's not just a problem of unmarried adolescents. This is also a problem of those young adolescents who are often in forced marriages or forced relationships. So, you know, I think that that's part of the problem. And you know, when you're a young adolescent who is in a coerced or pressured relationship, it's much more difficult for you to negotiate for protection that would be in your best interest, such as condom use. So that these are some of the difficulties. I also think that access to care and access to education is a problem, that many of these adolescents are out of school, so that they are not able to access, you know, comprehensive sexual education that could give them information and resources that might reduce their risks. And the other problem that we often have is that even accessing services for HIV counseling and testing are a problem. That we have, in our courses of our conversations with the young people who are attending this conference, we're learning that in some cases, they may present to a clinic for services, and these young people are being turned away. So there may also be a delay in diagnosis of HIV due to lack of access to HIV testing and counseling.
One more question, then I'll introduce our other guests. When hunger is so dominant, when poverty and hunger, of course, hunger goes hand in hand with poverty in sub-Saharan Africa in particular, then it's just hard to get the mind focused on general health. It's hard to get people to think about other issues when there's this pain in their stomach.
Yes, that's definitely a problem. I think that a lot of our young people are homeless. A lot of them are struggling to get a nutritious meal. And, you know, as we see in many of our countries that we're working in, there may be access to food, but it may be low-quality food, so that, you know, nutritional deficiencies are still a problem, undernutrition is still a problem. Even though there may be access to certain foods, they may be high in fat, they may be street foods that have been fried, quick fried, they may be high in salt. And this is another problem, you know, not to get away from the HIV issues, but the problem that we have with poor nutrition and access to unhealthy foods lends itself to other long-term problems for adolescents, obesity being a problem, and, you know, anemia as well. And these also create lifelong problems for the adolescents in these low and middle-income countries.
You're listening to Midday on WYPR. Dan Rodericks here with Dr. Michelle Farmer, a pediatrician and expert in adolescent health, who's a senior advisor for JAPIGO, the Baltimore-based World Health Organization, right here in Baltimore. We're joined now by Felicity Karimi. I want to say hello to Felicity Karimi, who's visiting Baltimore. She's part of JAPIGO's Brighter Future program in Kenya, and she'll tell us about that in just a minute. But first, I want to say hello to Felicity and welcome her to Studio A.
Hey, thank you.
Nice to have you with us. And along with Felicity is Amara Orji, a university student from Nigeria who has become a health advocate at her university, her school there, and is here also for the JAPIGO conference in Baltimore. So nice to have you with us, Amara.
Thank you.
I have your full name, Amara Chukwu.
Amara Chukwu Orji.
Amara Chukwu Orji.
Yeah.
Nice to have you on the show as well.
Thank you.
But Felicity, let me start with you because I have some questions following our conversation with Dr. Farmer here. So in Kenya, first of all, the Brighter Future program.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you explain that for us? That's a JAPIGO program, and what exactly is it?
Okay, the Brighter Future program is a program that involves JAPIGO working with the youth in school and the adolescents in school. And it's mostly centered around creating a life plan for ourselves, like in terms of career and values and reproductive health. It actually covers all the aspects of a developing adolescent. And I have been able to create a life plan within the program, and I've been training other students, adolescents, to create a life plan.
You created your own life plan with it?
Yes, I have.
How old are you, Felicity?
I'm 21.
21 now.
And yeah.
When did you create your life plan?
At 19.
Okay.
Yes.
And Jipaygo, this brighter future helped you understand that you
yes.
can plan a career path different than what you had in mind?
Yes, because...
So I have a question for you.
Okay.
What did you have in mind when you were 16 or 17 mm-hmm. or 18? What did you think the future looked like for you?
Okay. I had all these dreams and goals and things I wanted to do and achieve, but really no clear-cut way of how I would do that and how I will deal with challenges that seemed to come my way with all this pressure and all these decisions to make in day-to-day life. And Brighter Future helped me by helping me know, like, first of all, before even starting to create a life plan, like working with my values helped me realize that what my most important values were. And from there, I was able to actually, you know, create steps towards achieving the goals I had that were originally just...
So what is your, before you tell us about others' plans,
okay.
I'm just curious. So what is in your plan? Is it to go to university, to finish school,
more
schooling? What's
Okay, I'm currently a student at university, a public university in Kenya, known as Jomo Kenyatta University. I'm studying pharmacy in my fourth year.
Pharmacy?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and I hope to complete my education in pharmacy. I still have one more year to go. And then after that, I can do my master's and practice a little in pharmacy, branch out to many different things. I still have other interests in art and interior design. I have a lot I want to do. Yeah.
So, Felicity, so in Kenya now, with the Brighter Future program, you speak to other mostly girls?
Actually, both boys.
Both and boys girls. And girls.
Yes.
And are the first time you speak to someone about... Say a girl about not getting pregnant.
Okay.
Do you have that conversation with them?
Yes.
How does that go? How do you talk to another, a girl, not a friend, but a girl you're trying to help
mm-hmm.
about putting off getting pregnant, having children? How do you talk to her about it?
I found that the best approach to start such a conversation is first listening to the adolescents and letting them tell you what their life plan is and what they feel about certain issues, like in the case of getting pregnant, if their view on sex and use of contraception and all that. So first establishing their stand really helps to know how to go from there and what they need to hear and the information that you need to help them with.
So do you speak to girls who plan on having children at, I don't know, 16 or 17?
Okay, the main approach towards this is not to encourage students to, you know, have children at 16, because
I get that, but what I mean is
when
you start conversation with a young woman, say she's 15 or 16.
Okay.
And she gives you her life plan,
mm-hmm.
and her life plan means having children because that's what's in her mind.
Yeah.
How do you say to her, maybe you should wait to do that later? Or I don't know. How do you do it?
In that case, I would like first to understand what is driving this very young girl to want to have children at such an early age. I mean, when you get to understand, maybe you can be at a better position to help them through that decision and make sure it's actually what they really want to do with their life at that age.
And then just keep talking.
If it's really what they want, but really at 16.
You can't. So, Dr. Farmer, that's interesting to hear Felicity describe that. So she listens to the other girls or boys first, helps them put a plan together.
That's right.
But if there's something in there, such as, I want to have children at 16,
well, I think
then what do you do? Do you try to persuade them not to, or do you just accept that?
Well, I think what we generally find is the young people have lots of big plans. As Felicity's even pointed out, you know, she at 15, 16 had lots of ideas and really didn't have a good perspective on how she would achieve those goals. Yes, many 16-year-old girls like the idea of someday becoming a mother. But how to plan that when we know that education comes first, when we know that if they stay in school and focus on their studies, that it's going to give them the best chance to be a mother that will be healthy and a mother that can help her children. So I think that, as Felicity says, she's going to listen to this young person, and hopefully in the course of their conversation and planning, this young person will come to see, wait a minute, in order for me to be the best mother I can be, I need to finish secondary school. I need to go to university. I need a career.
And has that happened?
I think
is that happening with the Brighter Future program?
Yes, sure.
Because I would wonder if a 16-year-old girl decides that, you know, mm-hmm. she makes a plan with you,
yeah.
and she's going up against other forces, including maybe her own family,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes, I think that's true. This brings up some of those cultural issues that you were talking about mm-hmm. earlier. But again, one of the, I think, blessings, if you will, to have young people like Felicity in this program is that she can help them understand how to plan and sequence. One issue that we talk about quite a bit, you know, going back to that issue around 17 countries, low and middle income countries, with over 50% population under the age of 18, that we see this group as what we call a demographic dividend. Now, Felicity is not going to talk to that 16-year-old and say, we think you're part of the demographic dividend.
Right.
What this means is that if these young people, these teenagers, go to school and get an education, that they will in turn have job opportunities that they would not otherwise have. That as they begin to then finish university with Felicity's help and support, that they have a chance for that brighter future that this program is talking about.
I want to say hello to Amara Orji, who's also visiting us in Studio A from Nigeria, also here for the conference, the symposium that JAPIGO is staging. So, Amara, again, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Hello.
You're a university, and one of the things you've done there is publish a newspaper or a newsletter about health for the other students.
Yeah, it was kind of a publication
mm-hmm.
that was supposed to help adolescents not to indulge in sexual activities, prevent them from going astray, and then helping them to realize their potentials, bringing out the best in them majorly.
What has been the response to that from your peers or younger than you? What do they say?
Well, so far so good. It has been great.
Yeah? Mean they think this is a positive message?
Yes, of course, because they like getting their information from other youths themselves. So.
Yeah.
Yes.
Can you maybe explain a little bit to us about what goes on with other girls in particular in Nigeria when it comes to the pregnancy at 14 or 15 years old? You heard what Dr. Farmer, yeah. how she described it. What about in Nigeria specifically, in your experience?
So in Nigeria, in the northern part of Nigeria, you see most parents marrying off their children at early ages, such as 13, 14, 15 years of age, when these children are not even, they're not physically able to give birth at such ages. They have undeveloped reproductive organs, and you see them, it results in so much complications during childbirth. And sometimes they don't have a choice because it brings money to their family members. So yes, they do not have a choice. And then for the male, poverty also contributes to this a lot, because if their parents do not have the right resources to send them to school, you see them wanting to make ends meet, and they indulge in so many sexual activities. For the guys, they find sugar mummies, while for the females, they find sugar daddies. And then in my university, I see so many of my friends indulge in these sexual activities, not because they don't want to, but because they want a brighter future, but they have no one to provide it for them. So
you mean they're looking ahead even to after school?
Yes,
when they finish school,
yes.
Who are they going to marry?
No. Like, they want a brighter future for them, so they want to become people who are useful to the society. So you see people indulging in sexual activities, and you'll be surprised when you ask them, what's your ambition? They tell you, I want to be a doctor.
Yes. Oh, okay. So, this is cuts across classes then.
Yeah.
A bit. But Dr. Farmer, it occurs to me in speaking to Amara here, well, maybe what she just said contradicts my thought, was the better educated you are, the less likely you are to become pregnant. But that's not necessarily true.
Well, I think what Amara is speaking to is something that we call in this country transactional sex, that in many situations where a young person lacks the resources to accomplish their goal. And for adolescents, as you know, we could talk about which kind of goals we're they're
right.
looking at.
Right.
But I think that when they lack the funds to accomplish their goals, to go to school, if they lack the funds that it takes to feed themselves or to get decent shelter for them and maybe their siblings, transactional sex may become a factor.
I get that. That's why I was wondering about those who are in university, for instance. I would assume it's different, but maybe not.
Speak to it. Yeah. Amara, Marvin, yeah. You could speak to that.
So you say it is true among university students as well?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. So how does Japaigo reach the very low income, the poorest people in some of these countries?
Well, I feel that Japaigo provides a number of programs, and our programs generally make an effort to build capacity with the health workforce to reach the poorest of the poor. So we try our in many ways, whether it's pre-service education that is at the level of trainees, or in-service education, training those who are already working in these centers, mm-hmm. to build their knowledge and their ability to identify problems. In this case, we're talking about reproductive health problems of adolescents or other health problems of adolescents, to identify them early and get them in the best care possible. Our programs, for that reason, are very innovative and often involve empowering and building a workforce among community health workers or community health volunteers, as well as nurses, as well as physicians. So we like to see ourselves as a program that will build capacity and education along the whole tier. And I think, to Japaigo's credit, we are also building programs like Brighter Futures that is empowering very young people, mm-hmm. even at the student level, to educate each other, to listen to one another, so that we can address health problems in ways that minimize missed opportunities.
Peer education.
Yes.
We're going to talk some more with Dr. Michelle Farmer from Japaigo after this short break, and also Felicity Karimi, who's visiting Baltimore from Kenya, taking part in Japaigo's symposium on adolescent health. We welcome phone calls. If you have a question about anything you've heard so far, something you're curious about, you want to ask our guests, please give us a ring, 410-662-8780. Amara Orji is also with us. And we'll talk to her some more about life in Nigeria when we get back. A short break. Welcome back to Midday. Taking a look at the work that Japaigo does around the world. Japaigo, based here in Baltimore, J-H-P-I-E-G-O. It's affiliated with Johns Hopkins University and does a lot of work. Last time we had guests on from Japaigo, we were talking about midwifery, midwives in Afghanistan. Japaigo's work over there to train native Afghan women in that profession so that there might be, better results with childbirth in Afghanistan. And they were seeing some results there. It was very interesting. Now the focus on adolescent health and a conference Japaigo's having in Baltimore this week. Dr. Michelle Farmer is with us here to talk about adolescent health around the world and these big problems. Well, we're talking about teen pregnancy, but also the spread of HIV and adolescents around the world, the fastest growing age group for HIV. So I want to ask our guests, Felicity and Amara, about that as well. Amar, what, you know, we've been hearing about HIV and AIDS for how long, Dr. Farmer?
Since the early 1980s, since
1982. So a lot of us wonder about why this continues to spread. People have been hearing about it for many years. They know the dangers. They know the risks. So what could you say about that, Felicity? Let me start with you on that, in speaking about Kenya and your peers, young people in Kenya. Why does this continue?
Okay. In Kenya, the most interesting thing to note is that you find adolescents are more afraid of getting pregnant than they are of contracting HIV. And it could be because they don't see the reality of HIV until it strikes. And that is quite dangerous. And when they actually contract HIV, it becomes too late. Also, you find some youth don't really know about their status, and they are afraid to visit VCT centers, either because of confidentiality issues and unfriendly caregivers.
You mean they don't trust the medical system?
They just probably feel judged, or they feel that their confidentiality might be put at risk.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, the good news is that in Kenya, the rates of HIV infection among adolescents have dropped from 7% in 2008 to 4% according to 2012, the study. And that can be attributed to more adolescents actually testing for HIV and taking the education more seriously. Like for the Brighter Future program, we have regular health drives within school. We have moonlight VCTs where they run till like late evenings, and students can just come in at any time and feel that, you know, no one is up in their business, and they can just come in and get tested and get, if they're negative, of course, they're encouraged to keep their status. And yeah, the help is becoming real.
And Amara, what would you say about Nigeria? The same question about HIV spreading among adolescents.
I would say three factors contribute to the rise in HIV in Nigeria: poverty, peer pressure, and the lack of awareness on the part of the youth. Well, poverty plays a key function in this, because when most youths are, they come from poor backgrounds, and then they have to make ends meet. They have to feed and engage in other activities other youth from privileged homes are engaging in. So yes, they indulge in sexual activities without minding the consequences. Then peer pressure, which forces them to engage in sexual activities. Like in Nigeria, to celebrate your independence and freedom, the guys engage in smoking, driving recklessly, and sexual activities, while the females end up becoming prostitutes. And then they're not aware of their rights to get tested. Most of them, because of fear and confidentiality matters, avoid going to the youth-friendly centers or hospitals to get tested, because these personnel who are supposed to be trained might know parents or know people who know parents, and then divulge your identity.
What would you say, Dr. Farmer, if you can, about the government or the cultural infrastructure of Nigeria and Kenya when it comes to the spread of AIDS? Is there like in this country, there's, you know, it's pretty high profile. We've been talking about this for many years, and public health officials speak openly about how you prevent it. What about can you speak to Nigeria and Kenya in that count?
Yes. I think that there have been some successes, as our other guests have pointed out, but we still have a lot of challenges. There is still evidence to suggest that education has not filtered down to the poorest of the poor. And in those situations, less than half of young people have a clear understanding about HIV and HIV transmission. And as with a lot of situations, there are a lot of myths about HIV and preventing HIV that are not really based in reality. Well, there's some people who may feel that a first sexual encounter, for example, is a low-risk sexual encounter. It's only your first time. You don't have to worry. If there is a young person who feels that if I'm told this person is a virgin, I don't have to worry. Well, no, I don't think you need to just go on what you're told. I think there are also some other issues. And then the other problems that we deal with in many of the countries, and I think Kenya and Nigeria would be no exception, and that is the stigma that even if someone, a young person, could have actually placed themselves at risk, the stigma of HIV is such that it may be hard for them to get up the courage to get the test. And then also some of them having had the experience of getting up the courage and then being turned away, mm-hmm. that, you know, ostracized because they felt a need to seek out some help. That it, you know, getting the test really involves two steps. One is getting some counseling and information about HIV. And then the second one is about the test itself and the result. And there's so much stigma that it's very hard for adolescents to get through that network.
Felicity, do you find that when you do some peer counseling through Brighter Future, that this is the one that's harder to talk about, HIV, that your peers are not, they're more reluctant to talk about it than they are, say, pregnancy or other issues of health?
With HIV and AIDS, it's a pretty confidential sector. You find that youth, everyone speaks as if they're okay, you know, and no one would want to say that they're having problems with that or that they're positive and I mean, we wouldn't expect anyone to. So really, most of the time, even with the testing services and counseling services, the peer educators we're not involved in that. And we leave that to the health specialists.
Okay.
Yeah.
And another question, follow up on the Brighter Future program.
Okay.
Do you find that the peers, when you talk to them, especially young girls, that they recognize that if they put off pregnancy, starting their own family or, you know, having children, they'll be better off? That the society of Kenya may be better off if they do that? Do they understand that there's a, you know, big world out there, so to speak, that delaying pregnancy might be good, not just for them, but for the society generally?
Yeah, they do, because once they have come up with a life plan, they realize that they actually have so much potential they need to live up to, you know, and exploit so many areas of their life. And a 16-year-old, for instance, has their whole life ahead of them.
But they have to believe that there's a good future for them, too.
Yeah.
Do they believe that?
Yes, they do. Hmm. Because once you create goals and actually put achievable steps, it becomes more real. And they are able to see that they can actually, you know, accomplish their goals.
Amara, do you think that's true also in Nigeria?
Yes, I think it's true.
Do your peers see that there's a brighter future there, an alternative future to the one that they thought about?
Yes, they do.
Because, Dr. Farmer, I end this hour with you. It seems to me that it does come down to that, doesn't it? You have to believe that there's a better alternative than the one that you were brought up believing was for you, especially if you're a young girl in one of these countries.
Absolutely. And this life plan is very important. I definitely applaud Felicity and Amara for their work, and we are real excited at CHPIGO to have more youth working together with us.
Thank you very much for being here today.
Thank you, Dan.
Yeah, Dr. Michelle Farmer, who's a senior advisor with CHPIGO, a pediatrician based here in Baltimore. She brought with her Amara Chukwu Orji from Nigeria and Felicity Karimi from Kenya, both in town for the symposium hosted by CHPIGO. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Yes,
thank you.
Please have some lunch. We have lunch brought to us today by Rosina Gourmet right here in Baltimore, located in Canton, downtown Baltimore and Harbor East. More information available at rosinagourmet.com. Please stay tuned for the news and then the second hour of Midday.